In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Of course, tackling the climate crisis means, first and foremost, taking drastic steps to reduce our output of greenhouse gases, our carbon emissions. But what about also helping by removing excess carbon already in our atmosphere? This half hour, we want to explore how farmers can make money from selling the carbon their plants naturally remove from the air. IPR's Katie Pikus has been reporting on this and the carbon markets. She joins me now. Hi, Katie.
Hey, Ben.
So in just a moment, we'll be joined by an Iowa farmer you've been focusing on in some reporting in the past few weeks. But first of all, let's, for those of us not quite up on it, help us understand how the science of using plants to remove carbon from the air works.
Yeah, so it all goes back to photosynthesis, which was something that I think we all learned about in a basic capacity in middle school. So plants pull carbon dioxide from the air as part of photosynthesis, you know, like basically to feed. And carbon dioxide are made up of two oxygen atoms bonded to one carbon atom. So when plants pull that CO2 from the air through photosynthesis, they release the oxygen back into the atmosphere. And at the same time with the carbon, they turn some of that carbon into plant tissue, like stems and roots and leaves. Meanwhile, the rest of that carbon leaks out through roots and into the soil. So that's where, you know, that's all coming from, for carbon having this potential to be stored in the soil for possibly thousands of years if it's undisturbed.
Mm-hmm. And it's good if it's not in our air. It's in the soil. It's away from the air causing the gases that cause the greenhouse effect here and climate change. So tie this into what's happening here with carbon markets. What are carbon markets that we've been hearing about in carbon offsets?
Yeah, put simply, it's a way for farmers to sell the carbon that their plants have removed from the air and stored in the soil. And, you know, when farmers, they work with these startups to participate in a carbon market, they have to make some sort of a practice change that would be essentially better for their soil to be able to store more carbon. And once they go through kind of this whole process with a carbon market, then, you know, they're basically carbon credits, which are essentially an offset, like an amount of carbon that your soil has stored. Or, you know, once they have that, they put it on a market and they hope that, you know, a company or a person would buy that to essentially offset their own carbon emissions.
Mm-hmm. The carbon markets, carbon offsets, it's early days there in your reporting. What have you found to be sort of key questions or murky parts of this science that need to be cleared up?
So it is early days, Ben, and farmers do have a lot of questions about it. One thing that I focused on in my reporting is that, you know, in order to participate in a carbon market, a farmer has to make a practice change to be better for their soil. So something like that, maybe they reduce tillage or they stop tilling their soil entirely, or they plant cover crops. And companies send in third parties to verify and document a farmer's practice, and they calculate, you know, here's this value of how much carbon they remove from the atmosphere. But what I focused on here is scientists sort of point out that after someone makes a change on their farm, that changes to the soil are not as immediate as we might think, and it could take a really long time, maybe 15, maybe 20, maybe 40 years, for there to be a detectable change. in the carbon stored in the soil. So scientists do think that the science is a little bit murky behind this at the moment because it's so new. And also to point out, you know, farmers are in contracts for, like, I think usually 10 years. So when a farmer makes a practice change, they do have to continue to do this for a while. But the other side of the coin with that is if it's only a 10-year contract and scientists say it takes at least 15 years to see a big difference in the carbon in your soil, then, you know, that's one of the questions. How does that line up?
Mm-hmm. And in just a moment, we'll hear from an environmental advocate who specializes in this area with her view on this. But before that, we're joined also by Kelly Garrett. He's a farmer in Western Iowa, Crawford County, to be more specific. Kelly Garrett, welcome to the program.
Thank you. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. A quick snapshot of your farm in Western Iowa. You, I understand, grow corn, some beans, and some other things going on there.
Yes, my dad and I, we're about 9 miles west of Denison. We farm about 6,500 acres, corn and soybeans, a little bit of winter wheat, and we have a cow herd.
Mm-hmm. And you place a big emphasis on being sustainable in the way you practice agriculture. How so?
We're 100% no-till and have been for most of my life. Going into 2012, that's when we began no-tilling our corn on corn acres. That was our enhancement that Katie talks about. That's what qualified us for that. You know, we take the manure from the cow herd and we put it back on the stalks. We graze the stalks with the cows in the fall and the winter, and we use cover crops.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get to the heart of the matter here, the carbon market and this carbon as a cash crop, and you have really made this into something that has earned you over $300,000, I see. Tell us how this selling carbon as a cash crop started for you.
I'm a founding member of a website called extremeag.farm. That website is 6 high-yield farmers and one agronomist. So there's 7 partners. We're all across the United States. And because of our website, our website is about increasing our ROIs, our return on investment. And we, you know, we try to help other farmers do that as much as we can. We share our practices. Locus Ag Solutions contacted me, you know, not quite a year ago, about 11 months ago, and they were looking for an early adopter to go into their Carbon Now program, validate our sequestration, validate our farming practices, and then sell our carbon credits. And because of the way that we already farm, it really was a very easy decision for us.
Mm-hmm. And so we, yeah, you know, go ahead.
Go ahead. So,
no, go ahead. Well, I didn't know you weren't done yet. Go ahead.
Okay. So we put about 60 hours of work into validating all of that. You know, and as Katie said, there was a third-party auditor, a company named Aster Global out of Washington, D.C., that called, and I had to go through the audit and, prove everything that we said was true. We passed that, and then they put our credits into the NORI system. And Shopify gave us a check for $75,000 for 5,000 of the credits. We got that about December 1st, and since then, more credits have been sold. We don't have all 300,000 yet. We have about half of that, you know, as they come in. But, you know, we were the first farm in the United States to make a sale like that.
Mm-hmm. Help us understand, Kelly, how it's possible to even quantify the amount of carbon going into the ground, and you're doing things that you think increase the carbon sequestration, right?
Right. So no-till farming increases the sequestration, cover crops, you know, putting the manure back on the fields, pasturing the corn stalks with the cows, all those things increase the amount of carbon going back in the soil. And carbon to our soil is energy. I want to put as much carbon in my soil as I can because that's going to increase my yields, which is good for my pocketbook, which is, you know, my bottom line. And the science, you know, Locus and NORI have developed a system, an algorithm, to tell you what they believe your sequestration is. I know there's many, many, many methods out there, but it just, if if it becomes an accepted practice, I guess I'm okay with it. You know, I
right.
mean, that's over my head to say that, you know, the using a statement that the science is murky, you know, I understand that there isn't one set system for the United States, but, you know, there's different opinions on that, but that's how Nori and Locust do it.
It's evidently clear enough for someone to cut you a check, a sizable check at that.
Exactly. I mean, I think the proof is in the pudding there that there's more than one person that's comfortable with their algorithm, their methodology.
Kelly Garrett is a farmer in Western Iowa. Stay with us, Kelly. This is interesting because you are unique in this farming, in this type of carbon, capitalizing on selling carbon as a cash crop, right? You are one of how many, do you know?
I was the first, and there's other people that have done it now, but I can't, you know, it's just a handful. There's not many people that okay. have gone all the way through the process yet.
Okay. Let's include in our conversation as well, Ann Schechinger is a senior economic analyst for the Environmental Working Group. That's a nonprofit active in the areas of agricultural subsidies, toxic chemicals, drinking water pollutants, and corporate accountability. Ann, welcome to our program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being with us. I understand that carbon markets, what we're talking about today, is one of your areas of expertise there.
Definitely. So at my organization, Environmental Working Group, we have a Midwest office that really focuses on agriculture and the public health and environmental impacts of agriculture. And these carbon markets are kind of a real emerging part of ag. So that's yeah. something that we've been diving into lately.
Okay, so you heard Kelly talk about it, our own Katie Pikus describe it. What is your view, your organization's view of this whole initial start into carbon markets, carbon offsets, and selling carbon?
So these conservation practices that Katie and Kelly have been talking about on farm fields are really great for water quality and soil health. But as has been mentioned before, the science just isn't settled yet on if these practices can actually sequester large amounts of carbon in soil for long periods of time. So there's a lot of conflicting research right now about this. Like some research says that doing no-till actually moves carbon around different soil profiles instead of sequestering more carbon in soil. And there's also some recent research that's really emerging right now about cover crops showing that cover crops can actually rev up microbes in soil, which releases more carbon into the atmosphere instead of sequestering it. So, you know, the science is kind of still up and coming on this. So we aren't sure yet if this is going to play that big of a part in solving this climate emergency.
Mm-hmm. How much potential, though, do you see there if the science checks out, becomes clearer here, Anne?
We just don't know yet. That's a major issue with these ag carbon offset markets is that it's pretty much impossible to accurately measure carbon sequestration in a field. So, you know, carbon amounts can vary dramatically in farm fields, even within the same field. So tests taken even just 5 feet apart in the same field can have carbon measurements that are orders of magnitude different. So it's really, you know, hard to sell a carbon offset to a corporation when we can't extremely accurately measure how much carbon is actually in that offset. So, you know, we just don't know yet if there's going to be a lot of promise in this idea of offset markets and if mm-hmm. we can even measure how much is being sequestered in soil.
Do you see any downside with a corporation buying these carbon offsets?
Yeah, for us, you know, the big downside for corporations buying these offsets is that when they buy the offsets, they're not going to reduce their own greenhouse gas emissions, or at least not as much as they would if they couldn't buy offsets. So if these offsets aren't measured accurately, corporations might be buying more credits than what's really being sequestered. So that's really not going to get us, you know, anywhere with climate change if offsets are overestimating how much is being sequestered.
Mm-hmm. So if Corporation A receives a criticism, if I'm understanding you right, about putting too many pollutants, too much carbon into the atmosphere, they can say, well, look, we buy this carbon offset, we pay these farmers to do this, and so our hands are washed clean, so to speak, when you're saying not necessarily the case.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We've heard so much lately about these corporations that are going to net zero, and they can say they're net zero instead of just zero because they're buying offsets and not actually reducing their own emissions. So when we overestimate potentially a carbon offset, that's really going to hurt us in the end, because then corporations won't actually reduce their own emissions. They'll just try to get to that net figure by doing offsets. And I like to always say, I'm sure everyone's familiar with this, you know, the bathtub analogy of carbon emissions. So in this case, you know, an offset market would be a tiny drain that lets emissions go out of a bathtub. But to really solve the climate crisis, we need to turn off the faucet, and the faucet is emissions here. So the drain might help a little bit if we find out that the science really does work, but it's not going to empty the bathtub unless we turn off the faucet.
Okay, I want to have Kelly react to what you've been saying in just a moment. But first of all, Anne, what do you have to say after hearing Kelly's remarkable practice here and his paycheck for this? Are you saying Kelly shouldn't be doing what he is doing on his farm?
We're definitely not saying that. Kelly is doing amazing things on his farm. We love conservation practices. You know, the USDA has a lot of really great programs that pay farmers to do conservation. We just think, you know, funding for conservation programs should be increased instead of having to go through these markets where we're not sure if, you know, carbon's actually being sequestered through these practices. You know, we love conservation. They're really great for water quality, which is a very big issue in Iowa. So we want to do anything we can to encourage these, but then it's the offset side where it's being sold to a corporation that can continue to keep polluting. That's our real big issue.
Mm-hmm. Kelly Garrett, let me go back to you as a farmer who has a passion for sustainable agriculture, and you've practiced it there in Western Iowa for many years. What do you have to say about the criticisms and the lack of clarity when it comes to these carbon offsets and selling those that Ann mentions?
I hate to say it, but I do think that the government should be involved so we have an even playing field and the science can be decided upon. What is correct? What is measurable? You know, like she says, you know, the it's not decided. There's so many conflicting reports. I think we need to get to one standard. But the world isn't going to stop going around. Shopify buying my credits, the internet's not going away. Internet shopping's not going away. And people are going to continue to shop there, and there's going to continue to be emissions as those products are shipped. And I think rather than saying that Shopify needs to essentially shut their doors, I think we need to say that they should be applauded for buying my offsets. And, you know, them buying my offsets didn't make a difference in the environment. But if we can continue to go down that path and more companies will continue to buy a new product that I'm producing, which is carbon credits, and those carbon credits gain value, more farmers will change their practices to sequester more carbon. And again, the science is conflicting. It needs to be decided how much. But I think that they should be applauded. Do I think that they should continue to pollute? No, but there's a line between what is pollution and what is the world just moving forward. It's not
Kelly, what about the point that is made that this perhaps gives some corporations a pass to pollute because they can point to, hey, we're buying carbon offsets from these farmers. We're giving out X numbers of dollars, and so we are good. We are doing our part.
I agree that this isn't that we're going to give somebody a hall pass, and that would be another reason why I hate to say it, but I think the government should be involved to decide what's right and what's not. But again, we're as farmers, you know, I've had other farmers say that. Why should I help somebody else feel good? Why should I help Shopify feel good, or Google or Microsoft? Why should I sell these to them to help them feel good? Well, we're selling corn, we're selling soybeans. As a farmer, now I've got another product to sell. And if the government can be involved and the government can say, here is what the standard is, here's the science that we're going to use, here is the methodology we're going to use, and go forward, and then those companies need to get to a net zero, it doesn't mean, I'm not saying they should be allowed to do worse things on the other side of the curtain. I'm just saying I don't understand the problem with having them buy them. And, you know, a company like Shopify doing what they're doing, I don't believe they're trying to continue to pollute. I believe they're trying to make the world a better place. And okay, I think they should be applauded.
As we wrap up this conversation, sorry to cut you off there, Kelly, but
that's
we're coming to the end of the hour. I want to get Ann responding to your reasoning there. Does that sound like sound reasoning? Get the government more involved? Is Kelly on the right track with his thinking in your view?
I think in our view, you know, the government, it would be good to get the government involved on things like quantifying and verifying these credits. But I know the USDA has also considered doing a carbon bank where they would do their own private market and sell offsets to corporations. So we would have some issues with that until we really see this science settled. But I do want to add one thing that, you know, we do see farmers having a huge impact on climate change when you look at just their opportunity for wind energy, solar energy, you know, renewables, I think are really going to be a huge part of farmers' future in this climate space. Just wanted to make sure I got that in there at the end.
Okay. Kelly, back to you before we say goodbye. We have less than a minute here. What's your best guess on how this will develop in the future based on your experience of selling carbon as a cash crop, so to speak?
You know, I think it's an emerging market. It'll have its bumps and bruises, but it appears to me that the general population wants to move in this direction, so I think we will.
Okay. And
people want to shop where there's a net zero, or at least they believe so.
Okay. And a quick word of caution, I imagine, from you, Ann, before we say goodbye.
Yeah, just if you're a consumer who's looking into, you know, buying an offset, do your research before you do that. That's all I would suggest.
Okay. Ann Schechinger is a senior economic analyst for Environmental Working Group. Kelly Garrett, a farmer in Western Iowa, Crawford County. Katie Pikus, of course, our reporter there in Western Iowa. Kelly, Katie, and Ann, thank you very much for this conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, tomorrow on the program, we'll check in with several U.S. foreign policy hotspots, get analysis from Jim McCormick of Iowa State University, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, an international edition of our Politics Day. River to River, today produced by Matt Alvarez and Rick Brewer. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.
The Iowa legislature is in session.
Let's just go around. We got a lot of people.
There are proposals for constitutional amendments, education, taxes, the budget, and many policy bills.
So what needs to be fixed?
Our weekly podcast, Under the Golden Dome, is following the session.
I want to thank you for your consideration of this important legislation.
I'm John Pemble. Subscribe to the podcast or hear Under the Golden Dome on our website, iowapublicradio.org.